You got a big heart, Jackie. Everyone in this town knows that. I just wish I understood you. You're such a mystery. You say you're from Tucson, but you talk all fancy and Europe-like.
This is the way we talk in Tucson, Arizona.
TBTL!
You're here to make friends. Making friends is the name of this show.
That's my dream job. I'm going to take it. I don't care what he is. And I already knew he was bad crazy from our conversations at Walmart.
I'm doing the work. I'm baby stepping. I'm not a slacker.
You guys think I'm some kind of wimp, but I'm not. I am tough and I'm strong. And I love to splash around in chilly water.
With him out of the way, I think we're just going to be 360 spins and slam dunk pointers.
All right, hello, good morning, and welcome, everybody, to a Monday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
I'll say, what's up, Doke?
My name's Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Okay, guys, quick warning. I'm going live.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. It's an exceedingly rainy, damp Memorial Day here in the Bay City. But we're safe and dry inside the Broadcast Center and ready to bring you episode 3169 in a collector's series.
Let the fun begin.
On Friday's show, we were supposed to make the big reveal of the greatest drop in TBTL history as voted on by the tens of listeners. We're calling it the Drops of Stupider Challenge. It's run by our friend Jake in Chicago. And we really had one job on Friday, which was to actually play the champion drop. And I completely forgot.
What an idiot.
Until someone tweeted at us this weekend. Did I miss it? No, you did not miss it. I missed it. As in, the one responsibility of hosting this show. And I failed miserably on Friday. So here I am, working on a holiday to try to make amends over that whole thing. So we will actually tell you what is the winner of the Drops of Stupider contest. Also, speaking of wonderful, lovely sounds, the cicadas are coming back.
Well, look who's back.
After 17 years, parts of Virginia and North Carolina will enjoy the soothing sounds of hundreds of thousands of cicadas that have crawled out from the earth and will be mating and then dying. So we'll bring you the latest there. And then, speaking of mating, Grimes and Elon Musk, they've changed their kid's name.
Oh, hey, y'all said my name.
Because it was illegal in California. Who could have seen that coming? I don't know. Anybody with a rudimentary knowledge of Googling things? We'll update you on that as well. Plus emails and V-mails. And this guy, the longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. He's here working on a holiday, but it's a special kind of holiday for him.
I'm taking a shame holiday.
He is Andrew Walsh, and he's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
I am most certainly not taking a shame holiday. I am full of shame today. I don't know why, but it's just a general vague shame feeling.
I know why.
Why?
I mean, I don't think you should be feeling shame per se, but I think because we are now just a week away from TBTL-a-thon 11, Let's Stay Together, where you and I will be safely quarantined in an undisclosed location. I think you're probably just feeling tense about that and about the technical aspects of it and also, you know, just some of the content stuff. And I bet you that that's just giving you a generally anxious feeling today.
Yeah, actually, I think that's been hanging around for the past couple of weeks. But I am excited. We're going to have a meeting after the show. We have said that during the TBTL-a-thon week, 11, Let's Stay Together. I want to really reinforce the brand.
Can you use the branded copy that we have, that we submitted, literally? This is the difference in our experience, like in 2020 doing this show versus, I don't know, 2010 when it was first just at my house. We literally did submit that to various departments within the company to make sure they liked it, that they were going to, I think they're going to print it on something or put it on a website. Like, It's a whole thing now. This is a fairly legit project.
Can I pull back the curtain a little bit more and say what we say the name that we almost went with until our our significant others both were like, huh, you're going with that, huh? We were going to call it, I think, unless I have this wrong, Luke, TBTLFON 11, Friendos Till the Endos. Is that what we were doing? Right.
And I think you also said, I don't know, these days, in these unreasonable times, and anything with end in it, endos, it's just kind of a little, even though it's a made-up word, it still seems like a little ominous. And I basically ignored you, as I often do. And then every person that we said it to had the exact same response, which told me there must be something to it.
Well, our backup plan was then going to be TBTLathon 11, From the Grave and Beyond. And then that one struck you as somewhat kind of dark and weird and nonsensical, I believe.
That was exactly the feedback I gave for that one.
Right.
But honestly, I can't throw stones because my third place was TBTLathon 11, We're Not Going to Make It. Which, again, I think is funny. You thought was dark.
And then my counter to that was TBTLathon 11, It's About Making Us Comfortable Now. And you thought...
I'm so glad I swallowed my coffee before you did that.
Anyway, I was going to say, so we have...
So please give us money next week so we can continue to make hospice jokes.
I stand by location donation, even though it makes no sense. It does make me smile. What I was going to say was we've mentioned on the show that part of our week of activities next week will be holding some sort of virtual meetups. And we are going to have a meeting this afternoon to talk about what those will look like and how people can sign up and how we'll kind of divvy up listeners into groups so that we can have a bunch of manageable sized meetups throughout the week. So if you are somebody who has just been hanging on our every word, wondering what is the best drop of all time, who won the Drops of Stupider contest, and how can I be a part of these virtual meetups? We should have some answers to those questions later on.
Yeah. Well, two things here at the top. One, did you notice that I omitted something that I usually do when we do the show on a holiday?
I'll be honest with you. During the intro, I was filling out an envelope. I'm trying to mail some guy his driver's license back. I found it on the sidewalk yesterday. His name is Dan. He seems like a nice guy. And so I wasn't listening.
Ask Dan if he noticed anything different about the intro.
But I'm going to guess you didn't. Did you not do the usual kind of passive aggressive? I'm not even supposed to be here today.
I love it. We've gotten to the point where you don't even have to listen to the show. I mean, honestly, Andrew, that's impressive.
Yeah, well, we got there a long time ago, Luke. That was like 2013.
Yeah, because I was like queuing that up because that's always the thing I do. But then I was like, I don't know if that's the most positive message if I'm sort of acting, you know, mildly annoyed or resentful that we're here doing our job when the fine listeners are nice enough to download the show, to listen to it. Many of them help financially support the program. Like, I don't need to be – I just didn't feel like that was the most positive. And then it made me sort of retroactively wonder if over the history of this show, if that's made me seem a little bit petty or petulant to be playing that drop.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, I mean, are you feeling that today? I mean, that's also part of it, too, right? Like, I do think that some days you're kind of like, ah, oh, we messed up. We didn't see the holiday on the calendar. We really should have, like, taken the day off. And sometimes I think you are feeling that. What is your mindset today?
I'm actually very happy to be talking to you, and I don't have anything else going on today. That's not true. I'm in the midst of writing and editing a TV story, which was thing number two. I want to ask you about. As part of that television story, I was mentioning on Friday's show that, you know, it's about like online happy hours and stuff. And they said, well, you should have one with your friends and we'll film it, or, you know, we'll record it off of the Zoom and we'll have that as content. And so I sent out an invite, and I did invite your lovely partner, Genevieve, and a whole bunch of other folks that are in our friend group. I did not invite you, and I thought my assumption was that I was sparing you of just like a hassle that you probably wouldn't have been into. But did you feel in any way left out? Because I literally, it's like Camaro Kev, Anita, Katie, Rodin, Genevieve. There's only one person in this circle of trust who was not invited to this, and it was one Andrew Walsh.
I was not hurt. Can I? All right, I'm going to be a little bit honest here, and we can cut it out if it's too much honesty. But I believe it was earlier that day, or maybe it was Thursday or Friday, you were talking about this story, and I wasn't, I mean, off the air we were talking about it, and I wasn't especially generous about the topic. And I believe I said something along the lines of, like, people are already sick of having these Zoom parties. So I don't, you know, it seems like the story is a little bit, you know, a little bit late, which is a really rude thing to say.
You think
to
it undermines the premise that they're reopening, that in a week from now, there 40% of the bars in America will be reopened? Do you think that may undermine the peace, Andrew? Because you would be, sadly, the answer is you're right.
Well, but I do feel, you know, I thought about
that
later.
I didn't take any offense to that.
I didn't get the impression that you did. But on the other hand, you're entering into this project, and it's like, you don't need people being like, this is a stupid story in your ear anyway. So let me just put it that way. When I didn't get the invite, I wasn't like blown away, because I was both making fun of the peace and talking about the fact, quote, nobody even wants to have these anymore. But I figured that that is, I mean, I figured that's exactly why you didn't add me to the invite list, because I didn't show a lot of enthusiasm for the activity. Also, I did have a lot to do on Saturday. I was running errands. Yeah. And number three, the only thing is, at one point, Genevieve said somebody on the line said, where's Andrew? And she said, he has things to do. I would have liked it if she had just said he wasn't invited. That's the one thing, just so we could have it out there.
The thing he has to do is to weep softly while curled up on the couch, because, I mean, I took zero offense to you accurately describing the newsworthiness of this piece. People do get to see me spill a Negroni in my kitchen, though, while trying to make it. So there's that. Oh, and also the ring light fell on me during our, which I made sure to write into the piece. So there's like two moments of physical comedy, which maybe will be kind of entertaining. But I didn't take any offense to that at all. I just, from the experience of the last couple of times we did like meetups or a birthday party or like a little happy hour thing, and your, it just didn't seem like it was like the number one way you wanted to spend your night anyway. Plus, it's going to be filmed for TV. I just figured I was just making it so you didn't have to politely decline. But then what ended up happening was they recorded, I don't know, half hour of it for possible use on TV. And then the CBS hung up, and then we just reconnected. And then we all stayed on the line for like an hour plus. I ordered a Domino's pizza. Toon talked me into downloading the app. I actually joined the Piece of the Pie Rewards Club, ordered a pizza. We waited for it. It was not delivered by a Brody, a Cooper, or a Sawyer. But it was by a very nice young woman in a mask who also did confirm she is a snowboarder. So that's at least staying consistent.
What, was she really, or was she just joking?
I mean, I'm holding a laptop with our friend group on it, and I'm receiving contactless pizza and talking across the fence to her. So she said she was a snowboarder, but maybe she just wanted to get out of there because the whole scene was weird to her. But it ended up being really fun. Like, it was a really fun hangout. And then I thought to myself, even though you're probably like, it's not the number one thing you wanted to do, I didn't want you to feel somehow left out. Because if I threw a party and invited everyone I knew, you'd be on that list.
Yes. No, I would have politely declined. I'm not joking when I say I wasn't just like using that time to play a dumb video game or something. I was I did have running around to do during that time, and then I was surprised how long it went on, because then I came back here, and you and I have a little project that we're both working on that we're not really talking about right now because it is highly illegal. But I think I got the chemicals right this time, Luke. I'm gonna run some of the science by you later.
I'll tell you what, if I have to buy another RV.
So I had a lot to do on Saturday. So while Genevieve was in the other room, I was working on that stuff. So I would have politely declined anyway. So do not, and you saved me.
Okay, good.
You saved me that. Let me ask you an important question now.
Okay.
I'm ready to mail. I've sealed up this envelope to Dan with his ID in it. But now the stamps, I still have stamps. I used to go to the, I used to go online when we were still mailing things like rent checks and other other correspondents not all that long ago, I don't know, 5 years ago or so, I would go online and buy cool U.S. Postal Service stamps, ones that delighted me. And the last ones I have left are a sheet of stamps that feature two people, Miles Davis, and I don't even know how to say her last name.
He played the horn with the kink?
He did, right. And then how do you say her name? The French singer Edith Piaf? Seem, is that Piaf? Is that how you'd say it?
Yep. Yeah, Piaf.
What do I give this stranger? Do I should give him the Edith,
you go
right?
with Miles Davis or do you go with Edith Piaf?
Yeah, because I should save Miles Davis because I know who he is and I'm, you know, kind of a fan, whereas Piaf is kind of lesser, just in my eyes, because I'm not as familiar with her work. Not a lesser human being or artist.
No, no. In fact, she was celebrated. There was a film, a biopic about her a few years ago that was a big hit and won, I believe, an Oscar for the woman who portrayed Edith Piaf.
Really?
Whose name always escapes me for some reason.
How did I not know this? Because I have these stamps. I've always been like, who is this woman? I should look into it. Was it La Vie en Rose in 2007?
It was La Vie en Rose.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, I'll go with Edith.
I mean, if you, I want to go online and I want to design my own Postal Service stamps, which is with a cover of the record from the band The Postal Service. Could you do that?
Ooh, that is interesting. Now, it used to be that the person on the stamp had to be passed away, right? But do they change that rule?
Well, Ben Gibbard's dead to me because he never returns my texts.
Oh, does he really not?
You think that'll count?
Is that a true story?
I don't know what Jimmy Tamarello's status is. The other guy in that band.
Wow, but, nice pull, though. I would never have been able
to. Well, you know, I know him because he went to Loyola with Vanessa.
Oh, no, I didn't. So you don't know him just through Ben. You just knew him independently. Oh, I had no idea.
Well, I met him. We went to the Hollywood Bowl, and Death Cab was playing, and we rented one of those little kind of boxes, I guess you'd call it. That's the to this day, and probably until the day I pass, the greatest way to spend an evening, I think, in the on planet Earth is at the Hollywood Bowl in one of those little boxes. You bring a picnic. Have you ever done that?
No, I never been there at all. It was sad.
It's not even it's the way to go, though, because I don't even think it's like that much more expensive. You'd think it would be. So, you know, obviously they've got that famous band shell, and that's where the stage is. And you can either be in the kind of general admission, or I think for not that much more money, you get four folding chairs and a little like kind of, you know, like your own little square of patio, and you can bring food and drinks, and there's like a little table and stuff, and you hang out with your friends there, and it is amazing. I saw Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds there. That was a really fun show. I'm forgetting. I used to try to go any chance I got to that place. But anyway, we went and saw Death Cab play, and it was also amazing because there was a moonrise that just happened, like coincidentally, behind the band shell as the night came on, and the moon just rose over Death Cab. Then sitting next to us by coincidence was Jimmy Tamarello, the guy in the Postal Service, and he seemed like a nice fellow. But yeah, that band got its name, I guess, because Ben and Jimmy would mail, like literally mail each other tracks and beats and things, and I think Jimmy was the one who produced and assembled the record.
I think about that a lot lately because, of course, all these, not via the Postal Service now, but all these bands, various musicians, various artists are all collaborating remotely and swapping their files and syncing them up later. And that's what everybody is doing now. And it was so novel back in what year did that come out? Like 2004 or something along those lines?
Maybe. Yeah, that I think it was the Postal Service.
Earlier?
I think it was earlier than that.
Yeah.
I want to say it was like late 90s or something because, yeah, I remember because actually speaking of our friend Jessica's buddies with Gibbard has known him for years and was telling me about the Postal Service because Jessica used to actually have her own record label and would always hip me to the cool new music. And I remember her saying, oh, I'm going to go see the Postal Service at the Crocodile. And I was like, the Postal what? At the where?
2003,
which is a weird response.
I was close. I was pretty close. I think I said 2003 or 4, yeah.
That's crazy to me. I would have sworn up and down that I was still in college, but I was out of college by then. But yeah, I remember Jessica saying, oh, I'm going to go see the Postal Service. This is like, everyone's very excited about this band. And I was like, huh? Who? What?
That album.
And then became a big old fan. In fact, now I will probably, after the show, have to go listen to that record.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens to me.
It's an amazing record. And this is from pre-our friendship, because for me, I have strong, like, New Hampshire memories of this album coming out and just being blown away and being in our barn and listening to it over and over again. Still, you know, this was still, like, I had an iPod, but still, I think a lot of the music we listened to was still on CDs that I would burn and take up to the attic of the barn and just listen.
My memory is jogging down Sunset in LA. Everything comes back to LA for me today for some reason. Jogging down Sunset and listening to Such Great Heights. Mm. And I must have had some sort of rudimentary MP3 player, but it's possible I had a Discman still. Like, it's right on the line of that technology. No, I must have had, like,
you must have had a digital,
early iPod or something. But I remember jogging down Sunset in Echo Park and listening to Such Great Heights and just having one of those, jogging by that restaurant Tay, that big weird French restaurant that was at, like, the intersection of Alvarado and, or close to the intersection of Alvarado and Sunset, and just having one of those perfect moments of just everything in the world just seeming to be just right for that 2 minutes of my life.
I'm not saying this as at all as a jab. I mean, that I could totally see that as a crying record for you. I mean, I can barely get through that record without crying. I could see you, like, running with tears streaking across your face.
I'm more of a, usually I usually cry when I'm driving. I had a little moment yesterday. Rudy and I went out to this logging road that I like to take her to, and I'm just obsessed with that Kevin Morby Waxahachie song kind of mini album that I played one of the songs on Friday. I've just
so
been playing
good.
That
so good
over and over and over and over, and there's a line in that song, I mean, God, I hate it when people like quote poetry or something because it's so personal. It's like something hits you or doesn't, but there's a line in that song, Mama, here comes midnight with the dead moon in its jaws. Yeah. I was like, I don't know why that just, it made me think of kind of a couple of things. One, if you're ever staying up way too late and there's just kind of like this idea that, like, midnight has got the dead moon in its jaws, i.e. we're now on the other side of this night and now it's going to start getting light and we're screwed. Like, I don't know why that. And then also just life, like, definitely, you know, the midnight of my life has now come. I'm past midnight. You know what I mean? I'm probably at 1 a.m. or something, like, in terms of being on the back nine, which I know we have a lot of listeners who are much older than us. And for me at 44 to be talking about being on the back nine probably seems a little silly. But anyway, I was just listening to that album in the 4Runner. I'm driving back from Rudy and I have gone on this, like, extremely long hike in the woods where, man, a lot of people out on horses right now. I don't know what's going on.
Really?
I'm prepping for the apocalypse. But I was like, and, you know, Rudy's off leash. And I was just kind of like, let's see how this goes. And she was kind of intrigued and barked a little bit. But she also, I think, instinctively knew that she did not need to get close to any of these horses. But anyway, it was a lovely walk. The weather cooperated. And then we get in the car and I'm driving. And right now in Bellingham, there are cottonwood trees are just dumping their cotton. And it's actually very annoying because it just goes everywhere and it's like the swimming pool is full of it and all that. But in this moment, I'm driving down a windy road by Lake Whatcom. It's warm. I've got the windows down. I'm listening to that Waxahachie Kevin Morby song. And there's just wisps of cottonwood just everywhere. It's like you're driving through almost like a suspended. It's like I'm in boba tea or something. Just suspended, and I'm looking in the rearview mirror, and Rudy's just got her head out the back, and she's happy as she can be because she just got a fun walk in, and that was like, I started crying a little bit out of happiness. That's more my move, is while driving. Jogging, sometimes when I'm jogging and it's cold, my eyes will start watering up just because of temperature stuff, and then I feel embarrassed because I'm jogging past people with just like tears running down my face, and I want to stop them and go, I'm not having a meltdown, it's just cold.
Mm-hmm. But then if they hurt your feelings, then you will start crying, and then
well, if they don't give me a good response, then I will actually start, you know. So
I had a sort of a similar, it actually wasn't music, by the way. I did put that song Farewell Transmission on my monthly playlist that I've been talking about, Luke. I meant to text you over the weekend. I'd love that song. But I wasn't even listening to that or any music when I had a sort of an emotional moment this weekend. I was outside at the kind of at the living room table, and nothing was playing, but I could just sort of hear the sounds of Genevieve talking to our friends in the other room, and everybody was having like this big virtual party that I wasn't invited to, and I remember just being kind of overwhelmed with, I guess you would call it kind of grief and sadness, and I just started bawling right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess virtual happy hours don't suck.
Oh, no. I just snorted. Shoot. I got to stop doing that. I got to stop doing my snort laugh.
I'm trying to hack into the mainframe of my TBTL email really quick because on the subject of that song and the singer Jason Molina who wrote that song, I had one detail slightly off. Listener Harrison, I know we're not in the email segment, but since it's come up, Harrison is a huge fan of the work of Magnolia Electric Company and this guy Jason Molina who wrote that song, but I think I said I thought that the album was called Songs : Ohia. I think that was the name of the band that he. It's a bit confusing, but that's not a Magnolia Electric Company song. That's from the band called Songs : Ohia. I don't know if that helps people locate that info, but I was thinking about that on my jog yesterday, and that did make me cry a little bit. There's nothing worse than
just, it wrong.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just getting some stupid detail wrong, and, you know, like, because I listen to a lot of podcasts and a lot of radio shows, and particularly I listen to The Stern Show most days, and when he's getting something wrong, and you're just, like, cringing so hard, it's like, you know, as a listener, I create that moment for the listeners quite often. And then when I realize it's happened, like I saw Harrison's email over the weekend and I was like, oh,
you know, that's
going to
worse, though.
It's going to bug me until I can fix it.
Yeah. It's a worse feeling, though, when you know better. You know, in this case, this is something that's relatively new to you. And it is confusing because there is an album that is I'm looking on Spotify now. And this I guess this song is not on that record, but there is a self-titled record. There's a lot of records, so I could see this being confusing. What I hate is when I happen to know something, because, you know, I don't know a lot of things. So then when I know something and I'm proud to know it, and then I realize I got it wrong on the show and somebody corrects me, and then I'm like, ah, damn it. That was my moment to shine.
Yeah, it's funny how this comes up a lot, but it's just interesting the things that bug me versus bug you. Getting something wrong, I just said that I was thinking about it on my jog today, and I kind of, or yesterday, and I kind of was, but like for whatever reason, being wrong about stuff doesn't make me generally feel as bad as I feel, as it seems like it might for you. But then there's other things that like haunt me if I do them on the show, and they're equally trivial and small.
Yeah, yeah, we do have slightly different triggers when it comes to
triggers, pain points.
Yeah, pain points. Exactly. I mean, I literally cut out one of those snorts the other day. Like I was editing and I heard it and I was like, oh, I got to cut that out.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't realize how much I did it. I mean, did you, I guess you didn't either. Do you, I mean, I hesitate to play this. I don't know if I can find it on the fly, but do you know that Famdemort actually he collects those snort sounds I make, and he says he's got up to like 235, if I recall correctly.
Collector?
And he put together a montage of me making that snort laugh, and he didn't do it just recently because that listener, Aaron, called me out. Like, he said, oh yeah, this is a thing. Now, he wasn't piling on. He doesn't seem to like think it's necessarily a bad thing. He just thinks it's funny and put together a montage of me making that terrible, like,
oh,
and the best way I can describe it is like I'm laughing in a begrudging or teasing sort of way, and I just never realized it. Of course, now I hear it all the time. I mean, Aaron was right for all of the kind of Aaron bashing I did.
Well,
on
you
the
weren't
show.
Hawking a loogie, though.
No,
that's
true,
the difference.
Yeah.
And that's I mean, listen, intent matters, and like, you would never, as we have established, you would never, ever, ever hawk a loogie on the show. So I do think that, even if it sounds like that, but you're right, listener Aaron had noted something that I guess it happens with some frequency. I, when we do LiveWire now, of course, I'm here at home, and I do a very careful listen to the show, like a final pass, kind of, before it goes out onto the world, which is not normally what I do. Normally, I go to Portland, I do the show, and then they just put it out in the universe. But I'm a little more hands-on now, and I am mortified at how often I say And I'm not one of those purists who thinks that if you ever say it's a problem. I like naturalistic speech. But I think it was because we played some tape from Lynn Shelton. Mm. It's funny because I think I might have met Lynn Shelton through my friend Lynn Resnick. But we were playing an interview that we had done with Lynn Shelton kind of to honor and memorialize her. And I have these intros written for the show. It's me and Elena Passarello. I have these intros written, but they're kind of just loose. I kind of don't stick to the script the whole way. And I was talking about somebody who I really cared about in this world, Lynn Shelton. And I just, the intro was so stammery. I used made the sound like 12 times. When I listened back to it, I reached out to our editor. I was like, Melanie, you have to save me. Can you please reduce the ums by a minimum of 50% in that intro? And I never do that. Like, I don't really care about that stuff, but it was glaring. I think it was just because I was nervous.
Yeah, I don't think of that as a trait of yours. I guess, and I do go in, and every now and then I'll have to make an edit, or we'll have to do, I mean, very rarely. Remember, we had some technical issue the other day, and we actually had to do a pickup, which is very rare on TBTL, where I had to say, hey, Luke, can you say this sentence again? But in those instances, and I've said this to you many times on the show, and this goes back to our earliest working relationship before I was even on mic on TBTL, but I'd edit together the special TBTL weekend shows. I remember being astounded at how easy it is to edit you. And you said that other producers have said the same thing too. You are really good at not just doing pickups, but I'm figuring out how you're going to turn this into an insult. You talk in a very, in a kind of predictable, not the things you say are predictable, but you talk in a predictable cadence, and you have a cadence that is very reliable for an editor. So it's so easy to edit you, which is a good thing. But so every now and then I know that you will say, as kind of a reset point, and you can easily take those out or leave them in. But it doesn't seem like – I wouldn't say that that's an overriding characteristic of you at all. I do not think that you say a lot. I could be wrong. I could be immune to it.
A lot of times when I'm saying you're hawking a loogie. Mm-hmm. And so those will overlap.
You want to hear this,
I'm with
by
you.
The way?
I don't
– Should we just play
it?
Oh,
my God.
I mean, we're not going to play the whole thing because it's 49 seconds long, which is quite a bit of snorting. But let's listen to this terrible, terrible, terrible
And we have
sound.
It. The winner of – the Drops of Stupider contest. Calendar was. I was an inch off. It's very. But I can't.
People did. That was 10 seconds out of 50 seconds. How upsetting was that?
Incredible. That was wild.
One fifth of what Femme de Morte has put together. And
can
again,
somebody
already
please make a
together.
Song out of that?
No, please. Everybody leave this tape alone.
I want someone to auto-tune that, to give it the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt treatment, turn it into a club banger.
But it's a thing, man. It's a thing, and Aaron wasn't the first one to notice it, apparently.
I don't think that I use more than the average person, but I think when I was talking about this person who passed away and wanting to be respectful and convey my kind of affection for her, but also not overdo it.
Mm-hmm.
There's an right there. Not like I didn't want to try to sound like I was more friendly with Lynn than I was, but I also wanted it to be clear that this was somebody who did mean a lot to me and the show. I think I was just in my head about that particular introduction.
Yeah, I could see that.
And so it caused me to do more ums than normal, but it was a real flurry. I gotta get out of my head over this because I just said it was a real flurry. Coming soon to the Marsupial Gurgle page, 4 hours of Luke saying
I feel bad that you said that because I know that Femme de Morte is now going to feel like he has to do that. You do not have to do that. That is not, those are not marching orders, my friend. Take the holiday off.
Sometimes you can have a thought and you don't have to act on it. I've never done that myself, but I hear it's a thing that people are capable of doing. Okay, let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we will actually reveal the greatest drop in the history of TBTL. So stick around.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
I guess this is going to be relatively short and sweet, right? Because we have 2 drops left out of what started as 64. We didn't have a play-in game. if listener Jake in Chicago wanted to go really, really hard on the NCAA-esque nature of this, usually there's, I think there's a play-in game now maybe in the NCAA, so there's actually 65, it starts with 65 teams, and then two teams play, and then the winner gets in as like the sort of final spot, and they become the 64th team.
Yeah, I don't know enough about it, but I'll take your word for it.
I don't either, because it's been a long time since my college basketball team has been good and has gotten into the tournament. I was watching KBO on – I was texting you. I was watching KBO on Friday night.
Oh, yes, I did. I think I did.
And I actually was enjoying it.
See it. Yeah. Now, were you watching – because a lot of people have said, Andrew, you can watch all of the KBO games on Twitch, which I realize. But I got to admit, I do like the – I like hearing the English language. You know, I like hearing the ESPN people kind of talk about what's going on so I can get a little bit more context for who the players are. I was complaining that ESPN wasn't always broadcasting the games that I'd be able to watch. Were you watching an English language broadcast on ESPN?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it just came up on ESPN, and it was live in Korea, and I was liking the announcers. I know that you had been kind of a little bit underwhelmed.
Well, that's
with
game one. I was watching the very, right. very first game, yeah.
But this was John Shiambi, a.k.a. Boog. I don't know how he got that nickname. But then also a former softball player named Jessica Mendoza, and they were great. They were having this argument about if the mascot for the Dinos, who, by the way, the mascot's name is Swole.
Oh, that's
like a very buff dinosaur.
Right.
I know that I've said I don't like buff mascots, but for some reason, a buff dinosaur named Swole makes me laugh. Mm-hmm. And they were having... It was a very TBTL moment, Andrew, because Boog Shiambi says, this is a T-Rex. And Jessica Mendoza is like, he's absolutely not a T-Rex. I have kids. All we do is play with dinosaurs. I know this. That is not a T-Rex. And then Boog is Googling it because he's annoyed and knows it's a T-Rex. And he's reading from like the Wikipedia page of the dinos that Swole is in fact a T-Rex. Like, so they're kind of going back and forth over this, both very firm in their opinions. And then she's going, well, if that's a T-Rex, they did a really bad job of, you know what I mean? She's still trying to argue her point.
Yeah, that sounds, I think I've been there before. Do they mention this is dark, and it's not even my joke, it's from our friend on the text chain, but do they mention the stoma in the Swole dino's neck? Because the dino has a long neck, and they must have to put a hole, like, kind of in the middle of the neck so that the person inside can see out, but it looks like he's had a tracheotomy.
I didn't notice that. That went by in the text chain at some point when I wasn't monitoring it closely. But
do a quick Google.
I did
You'll
notice
see
that
it.
Swole was dancing on the dugout, and they had cheerleaders too. And, oh, this is another thing that they've started doing for I think, KBO and other places. I don't know. I mean, a lot of these sports franchises make a lot of money. I don't know if it's like the, hey, cool news. They figured out how to make more money. But there, I forget what the sport was. May have been soccer. Basically, people could pay $20 and they put up a giant cutout of you, a photo of you, like on foam core, sitting in your seat cheering.
And this, they're blown. This is different than the robotic ones that we were talking about on the show, where you can then control your own person.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, those robot ones are very digital, and they're like, it's like a piece of machinery that will like kind of put its arms up, and you're projected into it because of whatever. These are just old school. Like, if you had season tickets to whatever this, and I was watching this on ESPN probably right before KBO came on, whatever the sport was. If you were a season ticket holder, I think you paid another $20 or something, or maybe they gave it to you as part of your season ticket package. They had a picture of people, and they blew the picture way up. So these people were, you know, big enough that you could, if you were standing on the field, look and make out the features of these people, and they cut them out and they put them in the seats. And so there's like hundreds and hundreds of pictures of actual people cheering, and it was kind of cool looking.
Can I tell you something about this dinosaur named Swole? I have some dazzling details for you here. First of all, the dinosaur's real name is actually Swole Daddy. I'm not joking.
Oh, right.
Which is like very relevant to TBTL interests. And now I'm looking it up. Swole Daddy is a new nickname for this dinosaur that was given to the dinosaur by writer James Dator, maybe you know this writer, the sports writer for SB Nation. The headline from just a couple of weeks ago, I accidentally renamed the NC Dinos mascot Swole Daddy, and I have no regrets. Apparently, this writer just wrote about this dinosaur, called it Swole Daddy on SB Nation, and then the internet just kind of picked it up and ran with it.
I have to say, I'm dazzled by that deet. I am very much Team Jessica Mendoza on this. If you're looking at Swole Daddy looks much more like a Brachiosaurus. Swole Daddy does not look in any way like a T-Rex at all. Because of the length of the neck, like you said, there's that
more
little
like Tracheosaurus.
Show title? Tracheosaurus?
No.
I was trying to work out a tweet in my mind this morning while I was lying in bed, and I couldn't get there. But I was thinking about the president talking about how he's taking hydroxychloroquine. And first of all, I don't think there's any way on God's green earth he's taking it, because it's very intense and makes you feel very uncomfortable. And he doesn't like to do anything like that. He just likes to lie. But I was noting that the beginning of the word is basically hydrox, which is like the imitation Oreos.
Oh, yeah.
Like when I was a kid, we would get hydrox. And I was trying to do a hydroxychloroquine and oreochloroquine, some joke somewhere in my brain. I couldn't get there.
Yeah, usually if it's if you like, you do that thing with a tweet where you're thinking about it, then your eyes wait. I've been thinking about this for like a solid minute. If I have to think about it this long, it's not that good of a tweet. And then that's usually when I give up.
Oh, that's usually when I tweet it.
that's when you're just getting rolling. No,
that's
for
my
real.
Process.
Like I don't. I am the only tweets I'm sort of embarrassed about are the not the ones that don't get a lot of likes, but the ones that I clearly was working too hard on and also don't get a lot of likes. Those are the ones that I look back at and make me cringe at myself later. So like usually if I'm like, oops, nope, I've been trying to force this for too long, that's going to make me cringe later.
It's funny because you're absolutely right. Like the tweets that seem to get a lot of hashtag engagement are usually – well, for me, they're just something involving my dog, always, or the cat. But other times, it's just the simplest thought that just came in your head for 1 second. You tweet it out. You don't think back on it. And then a lot of people are like, I've also experienced that. If I'm trying to wedge some concept or connect some dots for too long, you're right. Those things, it's like a tweet will have the stench of failure on it when you tweet it out.
Yeah, and I'm trying to – I actually don't want to go down this road. Like, I could probably open up my Twitter right now and say, yeah, like, this is one that really makes me uncomfortable, but I don't feel like just spending this segment, which is about the drops of stupider, of me rehashing or rehashtagging my tweets. But, yeah, they're out
just
there.
Just delete, bro.
I know. I need to do that.
I'm going to get you a Swole Daddy t-shirt. Would you wear a Swole Daddy t-shirt?
Oh, hell yeah. I mean – I'd probably prefer that it not say Swole Daddy, like if it just said NC Dinos and it had the Swole Daddy on it. Like,
what if it said Dino Dongs? Because that's
– yeah.
Because, you know, a dong is a nickname for a home run.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
In baseball. Yeah. People will call it a dong. But Dino Dong has a very sexual connotation.
Are you looking at – do they have a t-shirt that says Dino Dong?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Of course. I mean, if I like the style, of course I would wear that. Yes. Yes.
Would you rather a Dino Dong or a Swole Daddy?
Can you send me the images and I'll choose it? Are you really going to buy me a t-shirt? This is fun.
Yes.
All right, good.
I'll send it to you after the show. We, Andrew, have to get back to the important work of announcing the greatest drop in the history of TBTL.
Now,
and
I have music. Should I introduce the segment with our
yes,
theme song, please, that we wrote? We wrote that, recorded it, and then ran it through Real Player 400 times to give it that old watery.
And after that, it started to sound like John Wayne Gacy Jr.
That's
by
right.
Sufjan Stevens.
This is the nice music, right?
We had to kill some drops. things left. What is it?
All right, I'm petering out here. I was waiting for you to jump in and save me.
I was enjoying that.
I had to keep going because I was only going to do two lines, but then I felt like I was out there hanging.
I was just trying to leave it in the clear in case we needed to, harvest that audio for later. Okay, so the final two drops were, I don't watch the news because I'm a kid, Noah Ritter.
I don't watch the news because I'm a kid.
And Power Out from our friend Linda in Australia.
Power Out.
And I don't actually have, I know who won, but I don't have the specific results in front of me. But should I just tell the folks who the winner is?
Yeah, do it, because I don't think we have I have the numbers. I can share those afterwards, but why don't you give the results?
Okay, here we go. The greatest drop in the history of TBTL, as voted by the tens of listeners, is...
Power Out.
Congratulations, listener Linda. I was pausing there because as I was about to activate it, I realized this would have been a prime time to catroll everyone. And I was realizing my failure. But then I was also thinking, why do I want to make the listeners angry
right. The
week before we're going to ask them to support the show financially? Why would I do that? Those were all thoughts that were going through my mind as that drum roll was playing. So there you go. Power Out is the greatest drop in the history of TBTL. I'm going to put you in a tight spot, my friend. How do you feel about that?
I feel great about that. I was going to be really bummed out if... As somebody who is part of the TBTL family, our dear friend Linda in Australia lost out to a viral video that the, you know, kind of world knows. Like, the Power Out is, again, something specific to our show. Yes, it came from literally a trademarked phrase that a radio consultant told us that we're only allowed to use if we acknowledge his trademark. But aside from that, we've really internalized it. And it's the voice of Linda, a real TBTL 10. And I would have been really bummed if she had lost out. So I think it's a great victory for TBTL. I think it's a great victory for Linda. I think Linda now has to continue listening to TBTL for the life of the show. TBTL, we're just trying to make ourselves comfortable now. So anyway, I'm really psyched. And it looks like that did win with 69% of the vote. Nice. And the one thing is, I was talking...
Dino Don.
I was talking to... who was I talking to? Somebody online, maybe on Twitter this weekend, and somebody acknowledged with me that the fact that Duplication Investigation did not even make it to the 64, that's the real tragedy that nobody's talking about.
Yeah. I would have thought people would put that in to just sort of troll me.
Yeah, you don't like it.
I don't dislike it. It just became a bit where it was like your love of it was so over the top, and also your love of that movie. And it's like LL Cool J. It's like it's LL Cool J and Holly Hunter or something.
Robin Williams, man. I know that he's passed on at this point, and I think I have more of appreciation for him knowing his struggles more. But I used to hate Robin Williams. I was the world's foremost Robin Williams hater, yet somehow I love this dumbass movie called Toys, directed by Barry Levinson, I believe. It has a very surreal, like, the way it's shot is this very surreal, minimalistic. Luke, if you actually watch the movie Toys, you will very quickly understand why I was drawn to it as somebody who, this is going to sound weird, who sees the photos that I post to Instagram. It's just so visually me, and that's what...
It's shot in a men's room?
It's a lot of...
It's above a urinal?
I took two urinal photos. I have thousands of photos. I took two urinal photos. But no, very minimalistic, very stylized and clean lines and swoopy and bright colors. And it's also got Joan Cusack in it, who's just a delight. I think that Joan Cusack is just like a treasure that we don't deserve. So anyway, I do love that movie.
I will check it out. You know, it's funny. I followed David Roth on Twitter, the sports writer. And he was in a kind of a Twitter thread about, like, movies that are kind of underrated that that don't get enough love. And somebody, I don't know if it was him or somebody in his chain, literally mentioned that exact movie,
really?
Toys, directed by Barry Levinson. This was like last week.
There it is.
So you've got some other people who believe the same thing now. But so Holly Hunter is not related to this film. Why did I think in my mind that's always been LL Cool J telling Holly Hunter that she's disrespecting his duplication investigation?
Oh no, is that Holly Hunter? Who is that? That I know she. I don't think
from Raising Arizona.
She. I feel like she's Holly Hunter-esque. But I feel like that's not actually her. I haven't seen the movie in a while. And I watched this movie. This movie came out in 92. Like, this is a movie that I watched as a, you know, I was in high school then. But I really didn't really know actor. I still don't know actors and directors that well. But I'm typing in cast now. I don't think it's Holly Hunter. I think it's Robin Wright.
Oh, okay.
That's who that
sure.
is. Yeah.
Yuri well, Smith. I'll give it a shot. But anyway... you were hurt that didn't make it in. I was surprised that's a tuner bro didn't go further.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I were sitting here and like this was before, you know, the listeners had weighed in and we had sort of like gone through the competition, I would have predicted that's a tuner bro was going to go really far. I would have predicted This Goes Out to All the Coffee Lovers of the World would have gone really far. I would have expected I Love Jesus and I Drink a Little, which did go, you know, pretty far in the competition. I was a little surprised. I mean, I think Power Out is a great winner, and I think this is a very, like, I think it's a very equitable end to this whole thing for all the reasons you laid out. It's listener Linda, who's an actual listener to the show. It's even though it's someone else's literally trademarked content, I feel like it belongs to us now more than the guy who invented it. I think it's a good outcome. It's much better than just some random piece of tape of somebody who's never even heard of the show.
Yeah, I forgot that's a tuna bro didn't even make it out of the first round. I forgot about that. I'm looking now. It lost to Jalapena.
Which is Shep Smith of all people.
Yeah, which then
I am looking
lost.
We should move on and talk cicadas, but speaking of wildlife, Andrew, I'm looking out the window and it's like I said, it's a rainy, gloomy day, and there is a tree. It must be dead because it has no leaves on it, but it's still standing. It's like probably 2 or 3 yards over, and so it just has all these denuded branches, and I'm pretty sure one of the branches that I'm looking at is actually a snake. I'm not high,
Whoa.
By the way. I mean literally, I think a snake climbed into the tree and is lounging and is like and so I'm mildly obsessed because if that branch moves, my theory is right. Also reminds me that there's still a snake loose somewhere in this house.
Yeah, or that's the snake. Maybe you have an
or
indoor
that's
outdoor
the snake.
Snake.
It got big. Yeah. Oh man. Anyway, speaking of wildlife, so congratulations, I guess, listener Linda.
Yeah.
And thank you everybody for participating. And listener Jake in Chicago. Thanks, man, for putting that together and running it. That was a blast. We should keep doing that. I don't know what. I think the branch just moved.
Are you being serious?
That's definitely. Yeah, it's definitely a snake.
Take a picture.
That's weird. I've never seen a snake climb a tree. I mean, although I know in like the Amazon, that's a thing.
Yeah, I always picture like in the, I mean, picture the Garden of Eden, which I know you do a lot. Like, isn't the snake hanging from a branch saying, eat the apple?
Right. Yeah, you're right. That's maybe where this guy got the idea.
it's a Christian snake.
I think it's funny how I was like, I don't think of snakes as being in trees, but literally the genesis, and I mean that in the literal and figurative sense, the genesis of my knowing that snakes exist is a snake in a tree from the book of Genesis.
Yeah.
Like, it tells you how far in the rearview mirror of my mind that stuff is, I guess.
Well, that snake also
probably
talked.
It's the main attribute of a snake.
Yeah, but also that snake talked. And I think you've since learned that snakes don't talk, so I understand why things got muddied.
The cicadas are going to be back in Virginia, West Virginia, and North Carolina. This is once every 17 years they do this. This is part of their mating cycle. This particular brood is called Brood 9. It's also a coffee flavor that our buddy Barry will be releasing soon from Broadcast Coffee. Brood 9. I get these kinds of cicadas are called periodical cicadas. There are annual cicadas that come out every year, as the name annual would indicate. And then there's periodical cicadas, which come out every 13 or 17 years, depending on the species. The last time this brood, Brood 9, came out, it was 2003. Does that mean that these cicadas live underground for 13 to 17 years?
Yeah, I believe so. Here's what I think I know about this. I think there are different. There are 13-year cicadas, I believe, 17-year cicadas, and then, like you said, the annual ones. The reason why I know anything about this, and that's basically it, is because I helped produce a radio story, and this was a radio story that really kind of – it was very fundamental in my development and recognition as a radio producer, because I've told you before that I, as a student at Kent State University, I was also an employee at WKSU, which is a public radio station that is – owned by the university, or they hold the whatever, however that shit works. they hold the license, right? I don't know if that means they own it or what. But anyway, but it was a real public radio station, and I worked with this guy named Jim Bloom, who did the folk show, and we were like kind of a little band of idiots, him and his producers. We had a good time doing that show, and we also would produce an outdoor series with him called, wait for it, Beyond the Backyard, which I'm scouring the web for right now. But unfortunately, this is just pre-internet, or just pre-everything being on the internet. This is like the late 90s, mid to late 90s. And we would go out in the field. He had some naturalist friend of his. He would take one of his student producers. We would record him interviewing his naturalist about whatever the topic of the week was, edit it down to something that would be like 2 or 3 minutes, and it would air on the radio station. But for the 17-year cicada one, I went out with him, and I remember an arsenal of microphones, including like stereo mics that we were borrowing from the classical music section of the station. And we really went out with like all kinds of like sound effects, both, I believe, real sound effects that we collected from the field and maybe even augmented with some other things. But we ended up making like this feature that was like 6 or 7 minutes long. No, maybe like 5 or 6 minutes long, but it seemed really long, about the 17-year cicada. And I spent I spent days and days and days mixing that, like multi-track mixing it.
Wow.
And trying to really like make it this immersive experience. And I was a student, pretty new at radio, and I remember digital editing was very new at that time too. So I think like all of these radio professionals who I looked up to and worked with were very impressed by my cicada story. And I really felt nice. Like the cock of the walk after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here, just like, listen, this is from yes. YouTube.
That takes me back.
This is in New Jersey, 17-year cicadas. This is brood two. I can see how if this was going on for days on end in your neighborhood, it might get annoying, but I kind of think it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever, like, in your research, figure out how are they making the sound? Are they rubbing? It's a mating thing that they're doing, right? That's what it says in this article. By the way, I should mention, I'm reading from NPR's website. Jason Slotkin was writing about this at NPR.org. The insects spend a majority of their lives underground in an immature nymph state, with soil temperature and year synchronizing their transition to a mature cicada ready to emerge, breed, and lay eggs. This immature nymph state, so they're just probably just like, they're kind of almost like they're technically alive, but they're probably in sort of a dormant state, it sounds like, for years and years and years underground. I wonder what that existence is like. That's a very... That's an intense thought.
Yeah.
I would not be into being in the nymph state of being a cicada, just living underground, minimally conscious for 17 or 16 years.
I think they just roll with it. Am looking this up here, and I can't find it. I don't think they rub. I think that crickets rub their legs together to make the sound. I think cicadas have a noisemaker built into them, which is what it's called.
Yeah,
it's the same
do.
Thing that the dino has, I believe.
Sure. It actually says in this article... the chirping that male cicadas use to attract a mate. So that's what you're listening to. That's, you're right, those are the male cicadas chirping.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with the singer John Cicada, whose beautiful songs also work in terms of attracting a mate.
What's John Cicada's big claim to fame?
I don't know what the song is called, but I just know that there's part of the song where he goes, ha, ha. That's what I know about the John Cicada song. If you Google his name, what's his big song has a part where he goes like, yeah.
Is this it?
Maybe.
This is called Just Another Day?
Yeah, probably. He sings one note, and then he sings another note. That's what I remember about this song.
Is this it, do you think? I think I've made a huge mistake here, by the way. I misspelled his... Okay, you think this is it?
Here you go. Every time we're together. Yeah, this is the song. But there's a part of the song where he goes... Yeah, where he goes... Now we have to listen until he does the ha-ha part. We're going to have to listen to this for 17 years until John Cicada has successfully mated. Okay, this is the part I think. Yes. That was it. Oh, my God.
There it is.
Does anybody have a cigarette I can smoke?
Was it worth it? All right, I think you
hate
it when
all I know about that song is he goes,
First of all, I think it would be an awesome bit. I mean, a very niche joke, but mm-hmm. I do feel that like in some sort of like an animated bug movie, which I guess there mm-hmm. already have been a bunch of animated bug movies, but like they should have a cicada whose name is John Cicada, who's a singer.
I think bet that you would someone be really did funny. That.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's right there for the taking. Also,
John Cicada is a graduate from the University of Miami in Florida, and because I was looking up John Cicada, it showed other noted University of Miami alumni, mm-hmm. including Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and for some reason this is surprising to me, Bruce Hornsby.
Oh, yeah.
Does that just seem like a weird place for Bruce Hornsby to be from?
Sort of. Do you think he walked on graduation day?
Oh, no, you're thinking, wait. Is he did? No, are you talking walking in Memphis?
No, I didn't. That wasn't even a joke. I can't picture. I don't even know if I can picture Bruce
Hornsby.
Oh, you
Hornsby. Mean like walk literally got his like hat.
Yeah, it's just like I can't picture Bruce Hornsby just like standing in line on graduation day to get his degree and turning his, you know, flipping his tassel.
Standing in line, graduation time, get your tassel and do your thing. That's just the way it is. I'm actually really proud that I was able to work that in that moment. I thought you were confusing the song Walking in Memphis by Mark Cohn That's Just the Way It Is by Bruce Hornsby, because they both kind of have this, like, I don't even know what you'd call that genre or genre from that part of the 80s. But there was just kind of like white guy piano, but not Billy Joel. It's like more wistful
and
or
more
something.
Of a horse. I don't know. It was a hoarse voice, right? Do they both have hoarse voices? I hate that tone of voice. I don't know if Hornsby has.
Mark Cohn has it going because he's being real throaty and like,
I hate that.
You know, are you a Christian? Man, I am tonight. Like trying to be like that guy,
right?
Bruce, I think Bruce Hornsby less leans into that. I actually got to admit, that's just the way it is. I kind of have a soft spot for that. Has a hip-hop artist sampled that piano riff? Because that's, I mean, that is a natural, right?
In our movie about bugs, I guess we would have a bee named Bruce Hornsby. Right?
Bruce Hornsby and John Cicada.
Cicada. Wow.
God, we are halfway to a DreamWorks picture deal, my friend.
We need to get the paper signed right now.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of funny names, Grimes and Elon Musk had to change the name of their child because the end of it was the number 12, which is illegal in California. You can't have numbers as part of your name. So, so they changed it to
the Roman numerals for 12, XII.
I really thought that they were going to take the opportunity just to...
Me too.
Just like say, oh, well, we tried, we did this thing, but now yeah. we can go with a more traditional route for a name.
That's. I saw the headline, it was like they changed the name, and I was like, I went on this whole journey with it thinking, you know, oh, they, like, first of all, I thought, wow, they changed it. They caved. That seems unlike them. And then I thought, well, maybe they just realized this is just way too much to saddle this kid with. And for the folks that missed it, the baby's name is X and then AE, like A connected to E. I don't even know what that term for that is, but that's some kind of play on artificial intelligence that Grimes came up with. And then A12 was the original name, XAEA12, Musk. And now it's XAEA and then XII for 12, Musk.
And no word as far as like what people will just call this human being?
No, probably Tesla. Let me describe for you, Andrew, your least favorite thing on planet Earth, probably, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even watch it. I just saw on CNN or somewhere a reference to it. Just let this wash over you. Jay Leno and Elon Musk driving that new Tesla truck together and shooting a TV special.
Is Jay Leno into cars, though? Actually, let me ask you a more relevant question. Where would he keep a car? If Jay Leno were to have a car, what room do you think he'd keep it in?
I don't know. Carport?
Yeah, probably Jay's carport. I love that. Have you ever watched Jay's Carport? It's pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
No.
On Man, Netflix?
It's like, I don't
that's
have...
a streaming service that I... It's $2 less a month than Netflix. They have Jay's Carport. They have Diners, Drive-Bys... and DERFs, a lot of programming that's very, very close to the original but slightly different.
Veeves and I have an ongoing joke that I will not be able to translate right now. And Genevieve, if you can hear me, could you come in here and explain this better than me? She is in the house. I don't know if she can hear me right now. But one time I was reading something on a package, and I was reading it completely wrong. It's like one of those moments where it's a word I should know, but in the context on this whatever this food package was, my brain was not putting the word together, and I was calling it something absolutely ridiculous, and Genevieve had to be like, no, that is this word. And we went into this whole weird bit about how instead of saying, hey, Google, like that's how you activate our type of devices in a non-Amazon, non-Apple home. If you want to talk to your phone, you say, hey, Google. And it led to this whole thing of saying, hey, Gorgle. And so now we just have this ongoing joke that I'm glad it makes you chuckle a little bit because I'm missing a lot of the context. And also, this is just like the idiocy of a couple being quarantined and getting silly, you know. But now we just have this ongoing thing when we don't know something or if we're bickering about a fact. We're like, hey, Gorgle. And that's our thing.
I love it. I'm a sucker for any kind of, you know, sort of, it's why all of the Steve Brule stuff makes me laugh so much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's so simple, but to just kind of mangle a word for no reason. By the way, Hey Gorgle is a great show title.
Yeah, okay.
And also, I wrote it down. And also, I just, in my attempt to riff on the idea of an off-brand Netflix called Nortflix, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dorfs, I actually think that could be a show. It's the Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives show that's hosted by Guy Fieri, but instead it's hosted by the Tim Conway character, Dorf.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Steven Dorf. Isn't that somebody, too?
Ooh. Dorf is the guy that they keep trying to make the sheriff of L.A., even though he doesn't want it.
Oh, what if it was Dorfs? You make it a plural, and you have both of the Dorfs.
Oh, my God. I love it. So Dorf, the Tim Conway character that's based 100% on standing in a box so that what they think are your feet are actually your knees.
Oh, that's right. That's what Dorf
is. He's committing crimes at various dine-ins, diners and drive-ins. And Steven Dorf reluctantly, as a cop who doesn't want to be a cop, has to come and arrest him. I'll mention something, too. This will be relevant.
I'm watching
highly relevant
Dorf videos on YouTube.
They're
right
pretty
now.
Good, right?
They have the full 1987 broadcast of Dorf on golf on YouTube, if anybody's interested.
It's so great. It's so, it's never not funny to me.
I forgot totally about this whole thing. What kind of a world do we live in?
I think I know how you're going to be spending Andy times tonight. Right. I'm going to get a bunch of random texts at 10:45 p.m. about Dorf. I was starting to say though that I should Guy Fieri. I was saying this is highly relevant. I'm thinking of one specific family of listeners, one specific person who would always get annoyed with me on Twitter when I would shade Guy Fieri unnecessarily. You know, obviously, like the kind of Guy Fieri's like aesthetic is not really my thing, and generally speaking, one time I just went to the menu for his restaurant in California, and it just was all stuff that just didn't really conceptually hold together for me. The food seemed like an expression of his kind of all over the place personality. It would be like, you know, like it was like fajita sushi shooters and stuff, and there's like a cartoon of someone riding a sushi like a bucking bronco. It just like wasn't for me. That being said, I feel like Guy Fieri is really having a moment. Like, I've seen more people talking about how during this pandemic he's just done a lot of great stuff for charity. He's done stuff with paying the people that work for him at his restaurants. He's done stuff with providing food for people. And everybody, I will say this, for somebody who is commonly and regularly made fun of Guy Fieri's whole vibe, everybody who ever meets the guy says he's just the sweetest dude.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, because of his look and the bleach blonde hair and all this stuff, it's so easy for me to dismiss him because it's not my style. But I do have to give the guy credit. He seems to have been really – he's really a force for good, particularly now. And people – everybody who meets him comes away loving him. So you got to – I got to give him, you know, tip of the cap on that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to get into something here that I try to talk about from time to time, and I'm incredibly inarticulate at it. But I do think it speaks to kind of our generation and also just how people – perceive the world these days. And I think that this is for the better. Like, I just think that you and I, very much Gen Xers, came up in an era where, you know, we grew up, I guess we're the tail end of Gen Xers, but like that we grew up in the 90s when everything was kind of an eye roll, right? We didn't tuck mm-hmm. in our flannel. And if you showed any amount of like of effort, you would roll your eyes, right? I remember a classic joke from The Simpsons. I believe it was the Homer Palooza episode was Bart saying that's – or no, that was Bart was trying to show – this is a different episode. Bart's trying to show off his skateboarding skills to a bunch of like 90s Gen X like skaters, and he does some trick, and one of the skaters says, "That just smacks of effort, dude." And I feel like that was kind of like that is a statement on kind of our generation or the era that we grew up in. And everything was ironic and eye-rolly, and I do feel that like a younger generation – people who are even just 10 or 15 years younger than us just didn't have that built-in eye roll on everything. Like, that the people who are younger than us are the people who are putting themselves out there with their flash mobs of the early 2000s and mid-2000s and dancing and singing and really not being afraid of coming off as a little bit dorky. And I think that's a huge difference. And I think that he has kind of he kind of pushed through on that. And as I follow some people on social media too, Luke, not to brag, who do have a legit appreciation for him. And while it's still not for me necessarily, I appreciate the fact that there are people who are just like, yeah, no, I like this Guy Fieri shit, and I'm not doing it ironically, and it's just what we like. And I appreciate
people love
that
show, that Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dive show. It's very popular. And I mean, I'd rather somebody's like wearing a you know, like a, I don't even know how you describe it, but like I'd rather somebody was wearing a shirt with flames on it and talking about flavor blasting a quesadilla or something and be a kind person in the world,
yeah,
than be doing this really elevated high art food, but actually be, you know, unpleasant or mean.
Frustration, golf, a game designed to test the true limits of man's patience.
I was going to send you this screen grab.
A sport combining beauty and strength. A sport demanding eye and hand coordination.
Oh, just an accident.
Here's the man who can put it all together for you. The man who can help you help your game. Dirk Dorf, the Duke of Divots.
Derp Dorf, the dupe of divots.
Dorf on golf. That's a lot of D's, dude.
With a special appearance by Vincent Schiavelli.
You know, Vincent Schiavelli.
Here's Dorf.
In the golf, the object of the game is to get this a tiny little weeny ball into that the tiny little weeny hole way down there with as few strokes as possible. Now I'd like to introduce a very valuable asset to my game of a golf, my caddy, a Leonard. Leonard will, of course, be
what accent is that? At times it sounds Italian. What accent is that? At times it sounds Italian. Other times it sounds like a deep Midwestern.
Kind of Swedish.
Yeah.
Giving me information about the course and selecting the right club.
The club's over there.
Right. That's what I mean. We get... Leonard, that's the clubhouse.
It's pretty, isn't it?
That's completely Swedish. Sorry. Yeah, once you said that, that makes sense.
It's funny because, like, every time he swings the golf club, you can just absolutely see his real legs. Like, it's not... It I don't know if that's matter. Part of the joke or they just didn't care back then, but it's like, it's not... even very convincing as a stunt, but it just cracked me up as a kid. Do this one move where he would like basically like lay down and then get back up, which would have been is obviously his knees, they have these fake shoes tied on to where his knees actually are, but it just changes the physicality of it. But I found it endlessly fascinating to see him do that move where he would lie down and then like sort of stand back up almost like magically.
It's so funny that you watched this because like, when you were describing it, I was like, oh, yeah, that rings a very distant bell. I'm sure you've brought it up on the show before, too. But this is certainly not something that I was watching as a kid. And even now I'm watching it, I feel like, was this for kids or was it for adults? Because in a certain way, the joke is completely ridiculous and it could be aimed at anybody of any age. Yet I think that I think of golf jokes as for people who are older than me, no matter how old I ever get.
My guess is this was for... this was for adults, and particularly like a certain kind of like middle-aged dad type, I think. And that's also probably kind of Tim Conway's at that point in his career, his kind of sweet spot.
So it really goes into you like reading Dave Barry and you reading the newspaper in the classroom. Like you were just like an old man, or you were just kind of like a middle-aged man as a kid.
Yeah, that's weird. I guess I was. I've never thought about myself that way, but you're right. The things that I was consuming was a lot of stuff that was – I mean, I also read Irma Bombeck, The Grass is Always Greener Over the Septic Tank, and If Life is a Bowl of Cherries, Why Am I Always in the Pits? And I fucking loved Irma Bombeck, man, which is like middle-aged mom-type reading.
And I only know that name from you, I think. I don't even – and we went on a Bombeck journey at one point, but yeah.
I remember vividly this – it must have been – I can't remember which one of her books it was about, but it was about them moving to the suburbs and how she wanted to have this beautiful giant suburban home that had these like pillars, you know, outside, and that she ended up with, she described them as being the size of cigarettes, and she sort of like flings herself down by these sad little pillars at this house that her and her husband have bought in the suburbs. And she says, she starts shrieking Tara, which is, I believe, the name of the plantation in Gone with the Wind.
Yep.
Like, this is so many weird adult, not even funny, but just like weird grown-up references that are all smashing together that some, you know, God bless Irma Bombeck, but I probably looking back on it now, I would not see it as the highest form of humor. But just like, I'm just a kid just like absorbing the stuff, being like, this is sharp. This is trenchant writing.
Did that story come from the book Family, The Ties That Bind and Gag? Or
I believe so.
I Lost Everything in the Postnatal Depression. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Sorry. All I Know About Animal Behavior I Learned in Loham's Dressing Room. I don't even know what Loham's is. I take it a department store.
That must have been a department store that Irma Bombeck lived near.
I Want to Grow Hair, I Want to Grow Up, I Want to Go to Boise is another one. Eat Less Cottage Cheese and More Ice Cream, Thoughts on Life from Irma Bombeck.
Isn't that funny that cottage cheese for like 20 years in America was considered health food?
Oh my God.
That was another biggie when we were growing up, right? It was always like if someone had cottage cheese and peaches like on a plate or just cottage cheese, if anyone was eating cottage cheese, which I know is like your idea of hell, but like – it was it was in the movies and TV, it was always the thing you were doing because you were dieting.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like not a good diet food, probably. Like,
I don't know enough about it. I mean,
you're like physically afraid of it.
Right. But I mean, it's better than a big bagel, though, even, you know, like by what we know today. Right. Like something that is
essentially
dairy based with a little bit of fruit is going to be better than, you know, anything that I'm eating for breakfast.
Well, right. And yes, but it's just funny to me that it was considered, it was like shorthand for someone's dieting. Like if you were watching any movie or TV show from a certain era in our nation's history and someone is eating cottage cheese, it's to let you know quickly that they're mm-hmm. doing a diet.
Yeah, that is true.
Once again, with the email every week, I hope that it's from a female.
Is this Swedish?
Oh,
sounds Dorfian.
From a female.
Oh, we need to reach out to the real Andrew Walsh and figure out if we're going to get him on the show to talk about his teaching career.
Yes, you know what? I need to actually get back to him. Although Andrew, I don't know if you know this, today's a holiday. I'm not even supposed to be here today.
That's true.
But no, I should email him back. And did we decide that the plan is to have him and Julian? They can connect up, and then we'll interview one or both of them about how it went. Like, we're going to put them in touch, but let their emailing back and forth happen off air.
Yeah, I think that we should do that. And also, like, I think that we just need to get Andrew on the show and just talk to him about, you know, because we've heard some interesting, dazzling details about his life. I'd like to hear more about that. I'd also like to hear how he felt when he received your email, how he feels about this whole ridiculous thing, and why he abandoned Julian and didn't leave any forwarding information. So we'll do that maybe later this week. Meanwhile, I promised on the show on Friday that I would read to you this, what I consider to be a fascinating email from Kevin in Cincinnati. I'd mentioned on the show the other day that I almost...
Oh, right.
It was a real... I mean, talk about fascinating stories. I almost sprayed air freshener in my eye, and I turned that into a five-minute story. And Kevin has a much better story related to things almost going in eyes. He says, your story reminded me of the time I got a BB gun for my 12th birthday. My parents gave it to me early in the day and let me take it for a spin. Then they left later that afternoon and explicitly told me not to get the BB gun out. As soon as they left, I called my friend from next door and told him to come
100%.
Over so that we could shoot our BB guns. As I'm walking in my backyard, he comes out of his house, yells something, and accidentally pulls the trigger on his gun. He shot me in the middle of my forehead from 40 feet away.
Oh,
I threw my gun on the ground and ran inside to my older brother. He's panicking a bit because we didn't know if the BB was stuck in my head. The welt was massive. There happened to be a fire truck a few houses down on call, so he took me there, but they just kind of brushed me off. So then he took me to his friend's mom, who's a nurse, and checked everything out. She confirmed that there was not a BB in my head. We get back home and discover that I broke my brand new BB gun when I threw it on the ground. Our parents are due back at any time, so I go to bed wearing a novelty hat from King's Island. To cover up the welt.
A novelty hat from where?
From King's Island, the amusement park. Was that an Ohio thing or was that a chain? I'm not sure, but King's Island is an amusement park.
I think it was
park.
A regional thing. Okay. Yeah, but okay, I get it.
So he could have been wearing a novelty hat from King's Island to cover up the welt. And he takes my brother takes my BB gun back to Walmart to exchange it for a new one. My brother successfully sneaked the new BB gun into the house, and my parents were none the wiser except for the huge welt on my head. The next day, we went out to dinner for my birthday, and I put a Band-Aid on my forehead. I told them that I had a cut from trying to shave a pimple off. Which makes no sense.
Weird cover story.
Yes.
But actually genius, because who would lie about that?
Right. He says, I should be blind in one eye. Power out. Kevin, a Cincinnatan. How
Man.
Great is that story? How
That's
great,
a great story.
Is Kevin's brother, by the way? That is the brother that I wanted and needed growing up.
Yeah, man. You love to see it. You love to see the teamwork because
it's
family dynamics are so interesting because I could see in a different family structure a sibling immediately running to the parents and being like, Kevin, duck the BB gun out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But this brother was like, you know, he was like Harvey Keitel in Reservoir Dogs. Actually, probably more in Which one is he the wolf in?
That's Pulp Fiction. Yeah, yeah.
Just like he just was like, okay, what do I got to do? How do we fix this? How do we make this go away? And also, I wonder how, like, Walmart. I wonder what the return policy was. Hi, we broke this, taking it out of the house we weren't supposed to.
Throwing
it on the ground.
I was thinking the same thing.
And also, so lucky that BB hit him in the forehead in the eye. That's crazy. That makes me think of two things, both stories that I've told many times on the show. But one is I have to this day, I have a piece of like a thorn from a tree, a very big one that's stuck in my knuckle. You can still see it. It's like way under the skin. But if I can make it poke out and stuff. And that was my parents were out of town and I was staying with my friend Peter's family, and I jumped up to try to get a wiffle ball out of a tree, and this piece of the tree jammed under my skin, and I was so afraid to go to the doctor, A, because it was like told that it was $1 million. My thought as a kid was, it's $1 million every time you go to the doctor for anything. So I was, my first thought was like, we can't pay for that, and my second thought was, are they going to cut my knuckle open and pull this thing out? Which I was more scared of that than leaving it in there, and to this day, 35 years later, it's still in there, which is weird. And then the other story, also involving my friend Peter, that's sort of more related to what the listener Kevin sent in about, was when, of course, I threw the Nintendo controller and snapped his tooth off, but we had to lie about the origins of the injury because his mom would have banned me for life. And the story we came up with was that a basketball hit him in the mouth, and Peter was very upset about this story because it made him seem so uncoordinated that a basketball would actually hit him in the mouth. He was like, that's not how I rebound. I would never do that. And I was like, that's all we got right now. And so he was more mad about that than any other element of this. Not that I broke his tooth, not that we had to lie to his parents, but he didn't like the nature of the lie I wanted him to tell because it reflected poorly on his basketball skills.
I want to go back to the BB thing for a second. This is a little dazzling detail that we recently learned. Actually, Genevieve recently learned it by watching the DVD extras on Royal Tenenbaums. Remember DVD extras? By the way, I've been watching DVDs. Oh, I sent you some screen caps. I watched that Wilco documentary, I Am Trying to Break Your Heart.
Right.
Because it's funny, like, it's not really available streaming anywhere. And, like, I could have paid $3 to stream it on like, I don't know, some site. But I was like, I've said this before on the show.
Netflix?
Yes. I pay for so many various services that, like, then paying out of pocket to stream it on Vimeo didn't seem right. Plus, I had the DVD, like, sitting in my chest of drawers. So I tried something. I have this portable. I knew it was a CD reader. I wasn't sure if it was a DVD reader, like a portable USB one. I plugged it into my computer and I was able just to watch some DVDs this weekend, which was a lot of fun, including that. Anyway, I am on so many tangents here. Speaking of BBs in and under people's skin, do you remember that scene in Royal Tenenbaums where whose character is it? It must be Ben Stiller's character has a BB lodged underneath his skin because his dad, Royal, shot him. They were supposed to be on the same team when they were playing a BB gun game, but then his father shoots him in the hand and the BB gets under the skin and it stays there. And there's a quick shot, a close-up of his hand as he moves the BB around under the skin as an adult. Mm-hmm. Does that ring a bell to you?
It actually doesn't, but I'm looking it up.
Okay.
Because I bet you, are you saying it's probably like what's, have you ever seen my knuckle, this thing I've talked about so much?
I don't know if I have, but let me just, before we get too far off it, people who do remember that, dazzling detail here is that Owen Wilson co-wrote that movie, of course, and that really did happen to his brother. Somehow his brother, Andrew, like the third Wilson brother, really does have a BB stuck under his skin in his hand from an accident as a kid. And so they got Andrew on set or whatever just to shoot his hand in that one scene.
Oh, so that hand is that the is brother's a real, hand. I love
that's,
it.
Yeah, that's Andrew Wilson. Wilson, Luke and Owen's brother.
That is. I'm dazzled by that deed.
I know.
What I can't ever figure out about this thorn. I'll show you when we're doing TB Telethon 11. Oh dear God, it's getting dark.
I believe you're thinking of TB Telethon 11. So cold.
TB Telethon 11. Mother, is that you? I'll show you. I'll show you this thing close up. What's weird about it is that it hasn't my body hasn't absorbed it because it's organic matter. A BB makes sense. Like a BB is made out of like aluminum or something. And so you could see, I don't understand how a piece of organic matter could just not get digested by my body's, you know, processes.
I wonder
it's very weird.
I'm not a doctor. But I do wonder if actually your body had some reaction to that, and what's under there is some sort of calcification.
Scar tissue.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very possible. But it's what's interesting is it's in exactly the shape. Mm. If it's scar tissue, it's in exactly the shape of the the original thing that happened. Although, you know what's interesting? As I feel it now, it's still there, but it feels like it's a little bit less there than it used to be. Mm. I wonder if... Nature is healing, Andrew.
TBTL on 11. We're less there than we used to be.
Dark. Okay. Anything else that we should...
Let me just do one thing here so that I can kind of clear this off my plates. So you were telling the story about John Mulaney, the stand-up comedian, telling a story about this police officer who would come to his school and give...
J.J. Bittenbinder.
Exactly, and he would give these kind of motivational speeches. And, I mean, I think you were saying this, and I was totally missing it. I didn't realize how famous J.J. Bittenbinder was. You had mentioned that Mr. Show guys did a parody of him. More details on that in a second. But I had said something stupid like, oh, yeah, John Mulaney should have just changed this guy's name. I didn't realize that J.J. Bittenbinder was, like, a celebrity. Like, did you see that photo that the Stubot sent us? He actually has a J.J. Bittenbinder shirt. And this is from Mike in Chicago. He says, as a Chicagoland 10, I've seen J.J. Bittenbinder in action live and on multiple public TV pledge drive specials. The money clip bit is 100% real per adult's presentation I saw. Oh, this is something that Mulaney talked about in his special. Mulaney is not exaggerating his demeanor. My wife remembers hearing the story recommending what to do if locked in a trunk when she was in grade school, and she was traumatized by it. I can't speak to the cowboy hat because I just don't remember. I'm going 90% legit on the John Mulaney bit.
Oh, yeah. My point wasn't that John Mulaney was fully lying. I'm sure this guy Bittenbinder seems like a real character. I just thought the cowboy hat, it was funny to me that specifically was what seemed to annoy J.J. Bittenbinder, was that he would not wear a cowboy hat with a three-piece suit. I trust that he actually remembers that accurately, but it sounds like everything else is pretty much a real thing.
And then our buddy Hollywoo Mike said the character that Mr. Show made up to mock Bittenbinder was called F.F. Woodcooks, and he had a crime stick, as one does. So here, take a listen to this.
Also, have you seen this man? He's wanted by crooks everywhere for trying to stop crime. His name is me!
So this is an Odenkirk character. A little action montage here. He's carrying a crime stick. He's got a big handlebar mustache. He's dressed like a bartender in a saloon in the 1860s.
Hello. I'm F.F. Woody Cooks. On Take Back the Streets tonight, we're going to shake the crime stick.
The crime stick has
at two cuckoo birds who thought they could get past a trained private security agent. On the night of May 14th, 1994, two goofs broke into a storage facility on the outskirts of Chicago.
We got to take this guy out.
Okay, they're moving on to another scene, so I don't know how much we're going to get Woody Cooks in there. But anyway, it gives you a taste of the parody.
That's great. I wonder, is Bob Odenkirk from Chicago originally?
I don't know.
Actually, I feel like he might live in Minneapolis or something. I don't know. Just, it's interesting what an impression this... Like, if J.J. Bittenbinder was doing the same thing, but he was just in Tucson, he wouldn't be famous, but there's so many famous people from Chicago who were just literally in school, whether it was Mulaney or presumably Odenkirk or someone else who was writing for Mr. Show at the time. Like, there's just enough people that were in school being mildly horrified by Bittenbinder and then grew up to have jobs in television.
Yeah. Almost like our buddy... I'm having one of those days where I can feel words not coming to me, so I really need to stop grasping for things, but Michael, he hosts the show about books. Good Lord.
Oh, Michael Silverblatt.
Oh, man. I know him personally.
Would it help if I played Dorf on football from 1988? With the
can kick? Yes, I can. Of course, I can kick. That's what I do here in the game.
Let me just one quick moment recreate one of your most exciting moments in sports. Okay, right, your team is down 2 points.
So this is Dorf again. He's in a hole in the floor, but he's a football player.
50 yards with only 10 seconds to go, and they call you out.
Boy, that's really exciting. I'm into this. What happens now? Go on. That's
okay. You say something to the quarterback. What's the first thing you tell him?
Well, the first thing I tell that quarterback is, "Yerke te tibun terarfinini."
Wow. Holds up. I mean, really holds up.
Yeah, no, I mean, the sound quality, but throw some Dolby on that, you're golden. Anyway, Silverblatt, I think, is parodied a lot in TV and movies because he has an offbeat radio show in Los Angeles. Like you said, if he was doing it in just like kind of Cleveland, Ohio, chances are it would go under the radar.
I know that this came up probably a year ago, but I started listening to that show a lot, and I started really enjoying it.
Yeah.
Like,
he's a special guy.
He's interesting. I mean, I know you guys just have him on the show that you produced and stuff, but it's like, because he would occasionally, there'd be an author that we were going to interview on Livewire, and I just wanted to get their vibe, so I'd listen to his interview, and he's a very, very fascinating dude. And by the way, it turns out I was so myopic, focused on the Dorf on golf. There's Dorf, world famous jockey Lyle Dorf, where he plays a jockey, like, you know, horse jockey. There's football, like I said. There's a whole range of pretend athletes where he is very short because his feet are where his knees are. I don't know how far you can really go with this bit, but I think Tim Conway took it a long way.
Yeah, he definitely found the outer limits of it, I'm going to guess.
Yeah.
What cicada song do we go out with? Or cicada, rather. Sorry. Or Hornsby.
Well, I only know. I don't want whatever he says there. That's the only one I know.
Well, then we could go the
How about
way
a Bruce
it
Hornsby
is,
jam?
The Way It Is by Bruce Hornsby, maybe, or Mandolin Rain, Every Little Kiss.
I gotta say That's Just the Way It Is. Can we hear that bad boy? Now I have Hey Gorgel as a possible show title.
Yeah, I have
Diners, Drive-ins, and Dorfs. Or Nortflix.
Oh, that's pretty good. God. I just wrote down Bruce Hornsby and John Cicada, but I think that we can.
Oh, that's good, too.
What was the Dorfs one again?
Diners, Drive-ins, and Dorfs.
I think it's that.
Okay.
No?
Yeah. No, I like it. I picked it, you know. I get a little bonus every time you use one of mine as the show title.
Oh, I didn't know that. Really?
Yeah. Oh. Yep. Huh. That's my contract is honestly like it was a real bear getting it done, getting it all signed off. But I'm pretty happy that I built that part into it. I get 4 cents every time you use something I said as a show title, and it all goes into an account, and it's currently at $11.
All right, listen, we don't have to do this. Think about it though, okay? I don't have that in my contract. So if we use a show title that I've just made up or something I said, nobody gets paid anything. But now I know about this sweet little deal. I'll just make sure that it's always your show title and we split the money. We get 2 cents each every damn show.
2 cents a show.
Mm-hmm.
5 shows a week.
That's rich. That's rich.
Opa! All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you are having a meaningful and memorable Memorial Day. And thank you again for listening. Thanks for being part of TBTL. We're going to be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. So please do tune in for that. We do the show 5 days a week because that's just the way it is.
I snorted. Don't do that.
All right. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all. Job.
just the way it is. Some things will never change. That's just the way it is.
Power out.